And now I give you Steve Yamshan.
Oh, thanks, Nora. It's been quite a wild couple of weeks here in the market. And last week, hopefully, you had a chance to read my newsletter. I had thought about the China trade issue for over a year. But last week, there was sort of an alignment of the moon and the stars and the planets, where I felt that we needed to reduce risk in the portfolio. So today we're going to try to keep the conversation just centered around the portfolio and some of the stocks and what's going on with the China trade. So Wall Street sold off sharply last week, but it came back to a certain degree as Trump and his Treasury Secretary tweeted aspects of the China trade talks. And, of course, a lot of that is just noise. I think it's much more complex, and it's going to be longer, a longer effect than just that. So, basically, the market sold off sharply last week and last Monday. The reason was the trade concerns between the United States and China. But let's face it, the market was overvalued. And when you have an overvalued market and then you have some disturbing noise or disturbing situation, the market's going to go down. So the trade talks broke down, and the Trump administration, they slapped tariffs on some Chinese imports. And as you would expect, the Chinese retaliated. I think history points out that no one wins from a trade war, but in this particular case, China has a lot more to lose than the United States. The trade issue between the U.S. and China and Europe have been going on for at least a year. And let's remember that the trade issue doesn't just encircle China. It encircles Europe. For example, the Trump administration has been talking about slapping tariffs on European cars as the European Union stalls on trade talks with the United States. Nothing has really been accomplished, and I suspect that it will take a while before the complex issues get resolved. Going back to what I said around this time last year, I thought that the trade issue might affect the stock market at some point. And last year, around May or June, I decided to reduce the stock exposure in the majority of the accounts. For the majority of the accounts, with the exception of enhanced fixed income and bond accounts, I had reduced the stock exposure from 65% to 55% or so. Each account always depends on the positions. As it turns out, the 2018 U.S. and stock market did poorly in 2018, but really it wasn't because of trade, but it was because of interest rates. This performance was unexpected and had little to do with the trade fight. The market responded poorly because the Fed was hell-bent on raising interest rates. In fact, the New York Stock Exchange fell 13.06 as represented by the New York Stock Exchange the first 3 weeks of December. But again, the market was overvalued in December. After the decline in December, the market became reasonably valued. So the market had believed or anticipated that the U.S. Federal Reserve was going to raise interest rates substantially in 2019-2020. However, in past conference calls, I said that the economy probably could not sustain an interest rate above 3.25%, which I would consider the equilibrium level, or what some economists call the neutral rate of interest, which is the interest rate at which the economy would not grow or would not shrink. It turns out that the equilibrium rate was too high and that it was below 3%. It turns out the Fed played a game of chicken and they reversed course and the market rallied in the first 3 months of 2019. Only then did the stock market become reasonably valued, because after the 2018 decline, it it became reasonably valued. Now it's overvalued again, which brings us to a crossroad. I think it's difficult to predict how the trade negotiations will go. I suspect that both China and the U.S. have dug in their heels. The Chinese don't want to look like they're being pushed around by the U.S., and they're very nationalistic. China doesn't want to give up their unfair trade practices, but the U.S. is digging in their heels too. I feel the truth is that China is not playing fair, and that the United States is right in playing hardball. China steals our secrets and forces companies to give up their technology if companies want to sell in China. Governments put all sorts of non-tariff barriers to keep products out. For example, China is well known for surprise and unwarranted inspections, bad-mouthing American companies, and keeping goods for long periods of time on loading docks. The U.S. imports about $515 billion of goods from China, but China imports only $110 billion. I would say it's a little lopsided. A trade war between the two economic giants is anti-growth, and it reduces income. And this is especially bad when the rest of the world is experiencing a slowdown in growth. If this trade war continues for a length of time, it could affect incomes, it could affect profitabilities of companies, and it could bring on a recession in early 2020. Previously, I had forecast that a recession might happen in 2021. The sharp drop in bond yields and fall in stock prices are really accurate assessments of both the short and long-term impact of a trade dispute on the world economy. For us, the U.S., the direct economic hit is minimal, but the negative impact will turn out to be problematic. Risk premiums in the financial markets will be higher, as most companies in the S&P 500 have direct or indirect operations in China. Furthermore, trade tensions will cause uncertainty in U.S. businesses and the community. It is difficult to pinpoint how financial markets will react to these long-term issues. I suspect that a steady deterioration between the two economic giants will be negative for the world economies, with impact on income, corporate profitability, and stock market returns. Deja vu is my mantra of 2019. It's my baseline scenario. Yes, it's true that the pause in interest rates drove the stock market to new highs and recovered most of the losses from 2018. But at the same time, a repeat performance may occur. Last week, we reduced the exposure to stocks even further in case of a trade deal not happening, and because we felt that the Uber IPO would not be a success. We took some profits in PayPal, but still kept a substantial portion, and we sold some weak issues that have not participated in this market rally. The ongoing trade war makes this strategy all the more important if the trade situation worsens. We can then expect the economy to soften quicker than I had anticipated before. This year's rally has been in retreat, and the market turmoil may persist a while longer as the U.S.-China trade negotiations play out and the Uber IPO settle out. Uber was originally scheduled to come out at $80 per share. The night before, or the few days before, they lowered to $45 per share. It closed the first day at $43 a share, and on Monday it closed at approximately $38 a share. For such a widely anticipated IPO, it was spectacularly a failure. The stock market is still clearly overvalued, which increases the downside risk in the short term. However, there always will be external noise in the markets that keep people afraid from investing. That's not my problem. The problem lies in ferreting out the noise from the truth. If you have a long-term perspective and you don't overpay for stocks, then over time you should do well regardless of the noise. At least that's what my experience has been. As ugly as it seems at times, there's no reason to do anything but reduce the risk somewhat. Not a lot, but somewhat. No need to sell all or most of the perfectly good long-term stocks. So we're pretty much done selling any of the stocks at this point. And if the opportunity arises where the market goes down by another 5 or 10%, we'll build up the positions back into the 50% range. As I mentioned, I had sold some weak stocks that have not participated in this rally, and I sold part of PayPal. I really didn't want to sell PayPal, but I didn't want to see it retest its lows of about $77 per share, considering I sold it at a roughly about $108 or $109 per share. I kept 4% of the position and sold the rest. As much as I hated, we sold out the recently purchased position in NVIDIA because I thought the stock could retest the new lows. NVIDIA's low was at $130, and we had paid $172, roughly, approximately, give or take a dollar or two, and we sold it approximately at that price. The stock is already down 13 from the price we paid, and it can go lower, although nobody could be sure of that. However, we do like that stock, NVIDIA, and we anticipate that we'll be buying it back into the future once the noise clears. There is no way to perfectly time the ins and outs of the markets, and I don't pretend that I can do that, nor do I believe that anybody else can do it either. However, I can adjust the risk by changing the allocation of stocks, and I've done this my whole career. When the stock market is cheap, for many accounts, we may have up to 65% stocks. We will never have 100% stocks, just too risky. If, however, the market is fairly valued, we may have an allocation of stocks in the 50% range. However, when the market is expensive, in general, we may have an allocation of 50% or maybe even below. Of course, each account has its own individual objective. Selling last week left many accounts in the below 50% range. Our goal is to keep the stock allocation around 50% when the time is appropriate. Right now, I am being cautious, and I have lots of cash to scoop up some bargain stocks. Cash and bonds at this point are my friend. And when it's appropriate and when the time to do so, I will purchase some stocks. So please stay tuned.
I will now unmute the line so we can start the question and answer session of the conference call. Please be considerate of everyone else who's trying to listen, and if you have to make noise, please try to keep it at a minimum. Thank you so much.
The conference has been unmuted.
We are now unmuted. Please proceed with your questions to Stephen.
Oh, I have a question. My question is, Steve, how about unleashing us from the market per se and going to individual stocks, which certainly is a different element than getting involved with some of these high-tech stocks that bounce around.
What?
I heard your question, but I don't understand the premise behind it, because we do have individual stocks. We don't have funds.
But, Steve, I was relating it to the conversation about the market, which really means the indexes in the various
Now I got it. Yeah, thank you. So what Saul was meaning was the market indexes are a representative group of stocks, and we don't necessarily buy stocks to outperform a market or match a market index. We do that for convenience so you can see what we're doing as a track record. We buy individual stocks based on the merits of the company's operation. So when we buy those stocks and we sell those stocks, it's really independent of what the market will do. However, when I feel that the market is a little risky, I might take some of the risk off of the table. And what I mean by that is I'll sell some of the stocks that may have not participated in the rally. And then, for example, PayPal, which has been a large position of everybody's account on average between 5 and 7%, I've decided to take some profits out of that, not sell the whole thing, because I believe in the long-term thing of PayPal. So my goal is to try to always minimize losses. So at times, even though I don't really want to, I have to sell some individual stocks. I don't know if I correctly answered that or not.
You did, but what I guess the gist of my question was several stocks going up or down, particularly in the high tech area, can make the market look very different.
It's hard to understand.
If you go further into the different stocks.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So right now, believe it or not, 50% of the S&P 500 are down 15% or more. So in a way, 50% of the S&P 500 in that index is kind of in a bear market territory. What's driving the S&P 500 is, like what Saul mentioned, is just a handful of tech stocks, because the S&P is market capitalization weighted. So the larger companies, the larger market capitalization companies dominate the top of the S&P 500, and then so that might be maybe 20 or 30 stocks, and the rest of the stocks follow. So what's happening with the indexes lately is those few stocks drive the index, but it's not the real world market.
Thank you, Steve. That was what I was trying to get at.
Okay, thank you.
With the machines and the fast trading are skewing what most of us think and see about the market.
Yeah, so we try to avoid that. Instead of buying markets, we buy individual stocks and we hold for the long term. But sometimes, you know, there's an opportunity or a time and place to sell those. As we talked about in my little talk tonight, and I've talked about over the years, is we can't time the market perfectly. Nobody can, I don't think. But we're not going to sell all the stocks. We're not going to sell all the stocks and wholesale. We're going to kind of bring it down to a level where I think that if there was something, you know, going very wrong, we won't get hit that hard. Any other questions?
Where do you think Uber is going to go?
Uber is very interesting. First of all, they're not making any money. I don't see how, with their model, they're going to make any money. All the Uber drivers are complaining that they're basically making minimum wage. The company cut the amount of money that they're giving them. And then they have expenses. And Uber wants to get into everything like scooters and rental cars and autonomous driving. It could go both ways. It could be a situation where it's like an Amazon that it doesn't make money for 20 years and then eventually does, or it could just simply not make any money. It's hard to tell. But at this point, I think it's overvalued, and it's not something I would be interested. That doesn't mean that we don't buy IPOs. For example, when PayPal came IPO, their business model was very clear, and it came out at $38 a share. It sat there for nowhere. But I understood the strategy. I understood the stock. I understood what they were doing. And now PayPal is the largest position of our account and has been probably the best performing stock. So I'm not against IPOs. I'm just against maybe ones that don't have really a big chance.
Thank you.
Hey, Steve, this is Ron. How do you calculate the equilibrium point?
Okay, who is this?
Ron.
Ron, okay. So there's an economic theory called the neutral rate of interest or the equilibrium. And what that is it says that what is the interest rate where the economy is neutral, where it won't grow or it won't go down. So what you do is you basically, how you calculate it is you take the 10-year or 30-year treasury note yield, and then you add the inflation rate, and that'll roughly give you an estimate of where the neutral rate will be. So let's say the 10-year is at 2.4 and the inflation rate is at 1.5, right? So that would be 3.4, almost 4%. But the problem is the neutral rate sometimes isn't accurate because there is distortion caused by quantitative easing, what the Fed did to get the economy out of the doldrums in 2008, which distorts that. So you have to make a kind of a calculation for that to try to understand how much QE has an effect. And so when I did that, I basically came to about 3.25.
Thanks.
Okay, any other questions?
Stephen, it's James Hegedus. Hi, tech stocks or entertainment as well, Netflix, Disney, Apple, how do they fit into what you described?
So I think Netflix was the clear leader in streaming video, but you know what? It's going to be a crowded field. Disney has got into it, and they're in a big way. Comcast just announced they're going to pull The Office off of Netflix and put it on their streaming. Of course, AT&T buying Warner Media is going to emphasize streaming. Viacom bought Pluto. They're going to emphasize streaming. Disney bought the rest of Hulu. That's going to compete more against Netflix, also with the Disney streaming service. I think Netflix is going to have some problems. They're spending $20 billion a year in content. They're not profitable. Their bonds are junk bonds. They keep having to float debt to just try to deliver content. And if you think about it, you go on Netflix, and there's so much content, you don't know what to see. So you end up seeing the old stuff that you like Friends, which, by the way, is going to come off of Netflix because it's owned by Warner. And there's just too much stuff and too much competition. I think Netflix has – I'm not saying it's going to fail, but I think it's got a problem.
So you apply the same strategy that you just described to us tonight toward those as well?
Towards what?
The strategy that you explained, it applies to those as well.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
So, let me talk about Tesla for a moment. We have several clients who took me in their Tesla car. I think it's really the best electric car out there by far, right? And it's just a great product. And, even I'm considering buying one. But problem with Tesla is they're so overburdened with debt, they can't seem to achieve economies of scale where they can make some money. So, there's been millions of products in the United States and the worldwide that are just great products, but the company has failed because they either had too much debt or they couldn't achieve profitability before something happened. So with Tesla, I imagine somebody's going to have to bail them out. Who will it be? I don't know, but that's what I suspect.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Thanks very much, Steve.
Okay, great. Well, gosh, I hope everybody has a good evening, and I'll be talking to you all very, very soon.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Don't worry.
Thanks.
Hey, bye, Steve.